There are a handful of things that people may or may not have seen over the years that have brought to them notoriety and scrutiny, whether they wanted it or not. I'm talking about the folks who have claimed to have seen something along the lines of a Sasquatch, Loch Ness Monster, Yeti, or a UFO. You know, the people in situations that many of us would be quick to dismiss as nut jobs. Well, while I'm not a card-carrying believer, I also am not ready to summarily dismiss all claims that may seem utterly preposterous. The reason I say that is that every year living organisms are discovered that were either previously thought to be extinct or completely unknown. While most are small organisms, some are quite large. Because that's the case, it's easy enough for me to buy into the idea that there could be things at the bottom of deeper waters, such as a Loch Ness, that might meet with the definition of a monster. The fact is that even in this day and age when our world can seem so small, there are undiscovered portions for which we have no clue would actually exist there. So I guess what I'm saying is, I don't completely discount the notion that the strange and the unusual can still exist in a technologically shrunk-up world such as ours. In fact, sometimes the unusual isn't all that mysterious, though it is unusual, and it can be found hiding in plain sight. Welcome to Bristol Bay Field Notes. I'm Terry Fuller, Education Specialist for Togiak National Wildlife Refuge. No, I do not have a confirmed sighting of a Yeti, a hairy man, or any other such beast to pass along today. But I do have sightings of two less common bird species to pass along from the past week, specifically of European starlings and Pacific wrens. And exactly what do I base that conclusion on, that these two species are uncommon to our area? Reputable guidebooks will show that neither is to be found here either at all or with any real frequency. But beyond that, I spoke with biologist Michael Swaim, the former Togiak Refuge bird expert, who up and took his game to the Migratory Bird Management Office in Anchorage this summer. According to Michael, neither was a species documented by him during his time living in Dillingham, nor were either species reported to him by others. So a hairy man sighting still might be a bit more uncommon than seeing either of these two bird species, but they both trend towards the same end of the spectrum. Last week I was walking back from picking up some fried chicken for lunch from NNN when I was stopped by three birds on the ground, off to the side of the road, just about exactly between the store and my office. It took just a moment for my brain to process what my eyes were sending it, though there was no doubt. Three starlings were feeding on the ground 15 feet in front of me. I don't know if you know anything about starlings, but they played a prominent role in my youth. They were one of the birds my grandfather wanted me shooting when he gave me that Daisy Golden Eagle I mentioned on the episode about air guns a few weeks back. The European starling is one of the world's most prolific populated birds. They are also an invasive species to our continent. For the sake of clarification, the term invasive species is akin to a dirty word within the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. An invasive species is one that is not native to an ecosystem and which causes or can cause economic or environmental harm or harm to human health. More recent examples include the huge constrictor snake issue they're having in Florida and Asian carp moving up the Mississippi River system, seemingly hell-bent on making it to the Great Lakes. What often happens with invasive plants and animals is that they push into an area and degrade, change, or displace native habitats and native species. In the case of animals, they compete with native wildlife for the existing available resources and are thus harmful to the species and resources. Starlings are an invasive species, though I have to confess there were so many across Kansas when I was growing up that I just thought they'd always been there. In fact, they've been around for a bit over a century. Back in 1890, a New York drug manufacturer and Shakespeare aficionado named Eugene Scheiflin released 60 or so starlings in Central Park. His dream, since judged to be an ecological nightmare, was to introduce every bird mentioned by Shakespeare into North America. Seriously. If he could only see the fruits of his labor now. The starlings' range across North America now extends from coast to coast and from the Arctic to the tropics of Mexico. Starlings in North America now make up a full third of the world's total starling population, and they're not slowing down at all. In North America, Breeding bird survey data from recent years shows an average increase of 16% per year in starling numbers in western states. Closer to home, and according to Michael Swaim, starlings were first recorded in Anchorage during a bird count in 1992. Subsequent bird count numbers would seem to indicate an annual growth rate in Anchorage of 23%. Based on that, my spotting of starlings last week may only be rare for but a moment. Their history would lead you to believe that more are on the way. For what it's worth, I wasn't the only one to see them. After asking around the office, several staff members have seen them over the past week, always right around City Hall or the Bristol Inn, and as many as five at a time have been spotted. In case you wonder if you've seen one too, starlings are medium-sized songbirds of about 6 inches in length that have a robust look to them. They are all black in color and can have a purplish-green iridescence to their summer plumage. Not so much so in the winter, when they look more drab. They are fat-bodied, have a short tail, pointed wings, and a bill similar to that of a blackbird. They can be very gregarious birds, with flocks numbering in the tens of thousands. They are noisy birds with no defined melody, but rather a series of random whistles, clicks, rattles, squeaks, and screeches. Starlings are aggressive birds and will drive out other species competing for food and choice nesting locations. They are very adaptable and just as comfortable in urban settings as they are in rural areas. Because they can be found in such large flocks and they eat seeds, they are regarded as agricultural pests and are capable of inflicting severe damage to crops. The other unusual bird sighting for me happened at my house last Saturday, when I spotted a strange small bird flitting about my yard. I managed to snap a few photos of the bird that, while they weren't exactly photo contest quality, were more than sufficient to make a positive identification. What I found was that I'd seen a Pacific wren. Digging a bit deeper, I found out that they are not very common to our area at all. In fact, as I mentioned, Michael said that it was not a bird that had ever come across his radar while he lived here. Since then, I've seen two of them in our yard on another occasion. The Pacific wren is a small North American bird and a member of the wren family, Troglodytidae, something I think is funny because the base word of that is troglodyte. And just what do you think of when you hear the term troglodyte? Most folks probably think of cave-dwelling, ogre-like creatures. Certainly, it's not a complimentary label to slap on someone. Wrens, on the other hand, are tiny, graceful, energetic songbirds. In fact, the root words that go into the word troglodyte mean simply cave-dweller, and wrens picked up that designation from their habit of disappearing into cracks and crevices in their search for food. Wrens as a whole have a unique look to them, with a small, rounded body, long, slender bill, and a narrow, rounded tail that is often held at a straight-up angle that runs 90 degrees to the body. All wrens are mostly brown birds and have a stripe through the eye. More specific to Pacific wrens are that they are a dark brown color above, somewhat lighter on the belly, with dark brown thin bars on the wings and tail. The lighter, almost white bars between the darker ones on the wings make it look like they have white spots along the wings when they're not flying. The bill is dark grayish brown, and the legs are pale. And just how small are they? Think along the lines of 3.5 inches long, weights of less than a half ounce, and a wingspan of 5 inches, or a little more. Pacific wrens breed along the Pacific coast from Alaska to California, and inland as far as Wyoming. They favor heavy coniferous forest bordering water. They hunt around the base of trees, something I was able to see for myself, moving around them in a methodical fashion before moving on to the next tree or shrub. They feed mainly on insects or spiders, but from what I've been able to find out, they will come to suet feeders during harsh winter conditions. And speaking of harsh conditions, Pacific wrens are no strangers to banding together when times are tough. Though they are normally a fairly solitary bird, they will sometimes roost communally in cold weather. In one case, 31 birds were found huddled together in a nest box in Washington State. So there you have it, starlings and wrens in Dillingham. Seeing either species might not bring you the same jolt as seeing a hairy man, giant bird, or a Lake Iliamna monster. But do take the time to realize and appreciate that what you're seeing is still a long ways from common. For Field Notes, I'm Terry Fuller. Music from Loon Echo Lake provided courtesy of Solitudes at www.solitudes.com.